Our guest this evening will be introduced by Professor Keene Kellogg.
Mr. Brannigan, ladies and gentlemen, in my long career up to now, I have introduced just two speakers, and it's been the same speaker both times. If these invitations don't come along a little more frequently than once every 10 years, I'm afraid I won't be able to work in more than perhaps half a dozen or so yet. I don't believe I'll tell you all that I know about Walter de Kloo, because there's always a danger of reciprocation and retaliation. Walter's accomplishments are so numerous and extensive that I'm sure I'll forget some of the important ones, so I'll just aim to mention a few. He holds a PhD in philosophy from the University of Munich and is also a graduate of the Vienna School of Music and Art. He's a conductor of many opera performances throughout this country and in several European countries. He conducted the NBC Symphony in 4 concerts. He has been a regular member the past 2 seasons of the Opera News Quiz of the Air, Metropolitan Opera Quiz of the Air, Saturday afternoon broadcast. He has also been a frequent contributor to the Opera News magazine. A distinguished linguist, completely at home in 4 languages, I delight to mention. It is indeed a high privilege to introduce my friend of many years as our speaker this evening, Walter de Kloo.
I think I have to wait until I say thank you until they come down to the hall, right? Well, thank you, Mr. Brannigan. Thank you, King. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You know, before I embark upon discussion of my subject tonight, I have to make a confession. Never before has the mere title of a speech or lecture caused me more of a headache. And why? Well, simply because I had originally intended to call this lecture Music as Propaganda. Now, it so happens that to many of us here, musicians and music lovers alike, the two nouns in this title have unquestionably emotional connotations. To us, the word music denotes more than a simple, definite form of human endeavor, comparable, for instance, to engineering or chemistry or any other science or skill which deals with matters and laws of nature and therefore can be called objective. Music, as perhaps the most irrational of arts and therefore the one possessing the most uncontrollable emotional appeal, to us has also deep moral and ethical connotations, just because its very substance defies most of the terms in which we evaluate other forms of human activity. Music, for instance, is neither right nor wrong. It is neither true nor false. It is neither efficient nor inefficient. It is simply good or bad. It is simply beautiful or ugly. And to say whether it's good or bad or beautiful or ugly is not a matter for the critic or for the musicologist or even for the musician to decide. It's a matter to be decided by the listener in ultimate analysis. Now, as strongly positive as is our attitude towards music and its emotional implications, it is equally true that many of us have an instinctively negative attitude towards the emotional implications of the word propaganda. First of all, the term propaganda has been thoroughly discredited by its being so strongly associated with totalitarian governments in this, our 20th century. Almost automatically, it evokes unpleasant memories. It evokes associations of Mr. Goebbels, of pompous mass meetings in Nuremberg or before the Palazzo Venezia in Rome, of loudspeakers blaring Nazi or fascist slogans, of and most recently it denotes the most ruthless attempt to subjugate people's minds into blind cattle-like obedience to the Politburo. But aside from all these extraneous, I might say, historical connotations, the word propaganda per se is apt to rub the psyche of a democratic people just a little bit the wrong way, because it implies some terms which we all feel to be repulsive, a sort of sneaky, half-honest presentation of facts designed to influence people's thinking without actually admitting that this is the aim. We all know that in our daily lives we are subject to a great deal of propaganda in our highly developed advertising, in political speeches, in all sorts of minor ways. And conversely, I venture to say that none of us here has not at one time or another indulged in some kind of subtle propaganda himself, even if it was only putting on a Sunday suit when looking for a job on a weekday, conveying, of course, the idea that we were always dressing so neatly as we did on that particular day. Well, while we make good-natured allowances for this sort of propaganda, it still holds true that we hold a deep-rooted suspicion towards the word. We are apt to say, derogatorily, this isn't the truth, it's just propaganda, meaning not it's a lie, but while some of it may be true, the presentation makes it appear as though it were actually better than it is. And because we are apt to despise cowardly, flabby crookedness even more than outright villainy, we are apt to scorn propaganda even more than the outright lie. Well then, how could I tie the two terms, music and propaganda, together? Wouldn't I defile the one, music, by mentioning it as propaganda? Or could I elevate the term propaganda to be worthy to be mentioned in the same breath as music? Well, for the time being, I'll leave this unanswered, and I simply speak about music and propaganda. And to make myself quite clear, when I speak of propaganda tonight, I mention the word as much as possible without its derogatory connotations. Unfortunately, you see, our language is rather poor in certain respects, and I have long felt that one of the major battles in the Cold War could be won by simply devising finding a one or two syllable word to define good propaganda, a word which would be stronger and more apt than information or campaign of truth or education or enlightenment, all these $64 words that actually, in last analysis, do not convey very much in themselves. Broadly speaking, we shall view music, too, under two basically different aspects. First, on the general basis, as a means, or if you want, as a gimmick to convey emotions or elicit emotional reactions. And second, on a much higher level, as an indicator of the cultural, psychological, sociological level of a given individual, society, period, or nation. And I want to add right away that it is this second aspect which we will scrutinize much more thoroughly than the first. The emotional impact of music is naturally dependent on the receptivity of the listener. Fundamentally, this receptivity is synonymous with ability to hear, because some crude form of reaction to some crude form of music can be found even with the most unmusical human beings. From the dawn of history, rhythmic drum beats could whip savages into frenzied passion, and certain rudimentary melodies could evoke certain individual and collective emotions. Over the centuries, the effectiveness of music as an aid in instilling certain desired emotional states has been considerably developed. and the growth of radio, with its dependence on acoustic devices, has forced the evolution of this development into a formidable technique of musical influence upon a mass audience. This technique uses the latest instrumental and harmonic devices to achieve an infinite variety of shadings, of moods, and of sentiments. It can acoustically depict almost anything, even the fragrance of a sizzling T-bone steak, or anything you want. We have the Voice of America, as every other radio station, major radio station in the country, an almost inexhaustible source of mood music, of all sorts of backgrounds and frames, which we use in our dramatic shows to get our listeners into the mood for a certain dramatic feature or for a certain presentation of the spoken word. Now, these well-calculated musical effects are, of course, no different from that of a stirring brass band introducing the speech of a political candidate, or a drum roll heightening the tension while a trapeze artist prepares for the climax of his number. It would be unfair not to acknowledge that this highly developed kind of musical technique known as mood music, constituting one important aspect of music as, I repeat, as propaganda, it would be unfair to deny that it has presented a most beneficial challenge to many of our composers. And I believe it's necessary to state also that it has not achieved one thing. It has not basically heightened our receptivity to music. On the contrary, I believe it has considerably dulled it. And to give you an example, it has always struck me as miraculous how Plato could mention that certain tonalities in the ancient Greek musical theory were considered unethical and immoral. Now just imagine what intensity of musical reaction must the Greeks have had to consider certain tonalities or to respond to certain tonalities so strongly that these tonalities were considered immoral. I've always myself thought, goodness, I wish once I could sneak off and enjoy the pleasure of a forbidden concert in F sharp or something like that. Well, we could, of course, go into this sort of thing and talk about it for a long time. But, as I've told you, it's the second aspect of music which we will dwell upon much more thoroughly tonight. The music as an indicator of the cultural and sociological state of a time, a period, and a people. When Shakespeare wrote, "If music be the food of love, play on, give me excess of it, that by surfeiting the appetite may sicken and so die," the Bard of Avon quite obviously underrated humanity's almost inexhaustible capacity to absorb music. Because what we experience today is nothing short of an incredible flood of music being unleashed upon our defenseless ears wherever you go. In New York City, you cannot even drink a cup of coffee without having music to go with it. You cannot walk through the streets without hearing some loudspeakers blare through out of motor cars or out of windows or any other place. You simply cannot escape music. I was happy to buy a car without a radio in it because at least it gives me a period of enforced silence on the highway. Now, this music, where does it belong? Where does it stand? Does it in any way reflect our culture? What is it? Where does it come in? How did it get this way? I think if we examine those questions a little bit, we will find some very interesting discoveries. Now, I believe it is true, it corresponds to fact, to say that it is possible to judge a given society by its music life. Thus, music becomes a sort of a window through which an outsider can look into the soul of a given society, just like literature, religion, architecture, or many other aspects.